low win rates, excessive discounting, challenging negotiations. Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group. We're an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. This podcast is about one question: how to transform your team into peak performers. If you want the answer, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.
All right. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Okay, yes. So I'm Michelle Peterson, Chief Member Experience Officer at A Plus Federal Credit Union in Austin, Texas.
Wonderful. Nice to talk with you today, Michelle. We're talking about member experience and the different components required to create an excellent member experience. So before we jump in, I just want to get your thoughts on, like, why does this even matter? Why is member experience an important thing that we should be striving for in our organizations?
That's a great question. Member experience, it's everything. If you're not a credit union, it's customer experience, right? So what your customers experience sets you apart. It's part of who you are. It's part of your DNA and the value proposition that you offer. So if you want to have repeat business, which who doesn't, making sure that your membership or your customers are treated exactly the way they want to be treated is really important. It's a critical aspect, I think, of any business.
Agreed. Now, it's a nice term that we can all talk about and kind of get behind, but there are different components that I think about in creating that we need to understand the why behind that experience. And that speaks to building a culture that values member experience. There's the what, that we need to know what to offer to create a good experience for our members, and then how to do it properly. There's a right way and a wrong way. So let's take those each at one at a time here. So let's talk about culture. Why is culture so important to the member experience?
Gosh, so culture is basically how your customers or your members see your business, how they see the organization. So culture, in my opinion, is absolutely critical. At my organization and my style of leading, which is what I found such value in working at A Plus Federal Credit Union, is that they put the team member, the employee experience, equal to the member experience. So if you think about it, who's interacting with your members more? Is it the executive team like myself, or is it management, or is it the actual frontline staff? So if you understand that that's how business works, then you recognize the criticality of culture and how important it is to balance the employee experience equal to the member experience, where one is not above or below the other. So when you have a culture, it should be purposeful. And I think every organization has a culture, whether they know it or not, they have a culture. What I love about A Plus, and to be honest, SRG is no different. That's one of the things we align so much on, is our focus on relationships. And I think that's really important. You can see it, you can feel it, you can smell it. Culture is not something you can hide. So at A Plus, our culture is very purposeful. It's very intentional. And not every vendor, not every customer, not every consumer fits. We meet a certain demographic, a certain member need. And what I'll summarize in there, people don't remember what you say or what you did for them. They remember how you make them feel. So if you understand that, how you make your customer, your member feel is really important. And we value relationships. You can sense it and see it. And we're not perfect. We make mistakes. But it's how you go about recovering or repairing that makes the difference. So it's not about perfection. It's about excellence. So at the end of the day, I think culture is everything. It shows in how you treat everyone and the things that you put your priority on, right? What we talk about is what we value. So in my opinion, that's what a culture is.
Great. Yeah. And it just makes me think about, there's corporate values, and I can go on pretty much any company organizational website and see those values on one of the main landing pages. How do we take those from the website and actually put them into our people?
Yes, Absolutely. It's interesting. At A+, our core values are banking on each other and building stronger communities, right? So when we get stuck, which we get stuck a lot, we have very robust conversations, not only with my departments, but at the executive level. We always come back to, okay, so if we are going to stand by our mission and vision, so banking on each other and building strong communities, how are we going to make this decision? Let's align it with that direction. So it goes back to culture. I think that's everything and very important for any organization, any business to have.
Mm-hmm. And just the fact that you can, on the spot, say, here are our values, I'll quote them to you right now. It's clearly something that you do discuss and it's repeated day in and day out. And that has to be like, you're beating the same drum over and over and over again until everyone can repeat those values.
Yes. And I think it's all also natural, Greg. Life is busy and messy, right? There's a lot going on, especially in this economy and this economic environment. And so it's easy, I think, to get off center. So coming back to center with your mantra, with your mission, with your vision, I think is really important.
Yep. Yep. Now, let's say we get off kilter, we get a little bit off center and we've lost our way. What's at stake if we are not intentional about building our culture?
Oh, everything. My goodness. I think we have to expect you can't be perfect. Perfection is not reasonable. I think all we can strive for is excellence, and sometimes better before perfect, better before excellent is what we need to do. I think it's really about, you need to build around you accountabilities. And that's where culture comes in, because if you have a culture that's very purposeful, intentional, and it's weaved into your DNA and everything you do and focus on, it's not hard to find a partner that says, Michelle, which happens to me a lot. I create an environment where my direct reports coach me. I say, hey, we coach each other. You're executives. We're going to coach each other and we're going to figure out how to do things together. And sometimes you're going to have manager courage to hold me accountable. And I encourage that. I sprinkle fairy dust of empowerment. So I think it's really about, number one, recognize you will get off center. That's just called being human. That's just called, you know, running a business. But how you come back to center, I think, is everything.
Yeah. No, that's great. And the big thing that I'm hearing is excellence over perfection, that we're never going to be perfect, but we can always strive to be better. Mm-hmm. And that keeping the first things first, I guess, you didn't say it that way, but keeping our values front and center, and then having mechanisms to pull us back when we inevitably, you know, we will get a little bit off, but when we have people surrounding us to bring us back, then we'll be much more likely to recover well.
Absolutely. And then one more thing, better before perfect, better before excellent. Sometimes it's okay just to get better. And maybe that's one step forward. There's a book called Failing Forward. Oh, I love that book, because we have to fail in order to succeed. And I think we forget that. We can very much get confused and forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's shift gears here. We can have a fantastic culture, but if we don't have the knowledge or the skills to actually add value to our members, and it's like, hey, great people, but I don't really know how they're going to help me. So thinking about the product and industry knowledge you need to build in your team, specifically the branch team, the member facing team, how important is credibility when speaking with a member?
Oh my gosh, it's so important. It's so interesting. You caught me at the perfect time, because we just finished our consultative conversations coaches training. And now we're moving into the frontline training on consultative conversations. But one of the things we realized is it's so important to start with leaders first, with the management staff first. That is so non-negotiable, because we're realizing not everybody understands what we mean and what it is. But it makes sense. Think about it. It's kind of logical. Why wouldn't you start with managers first? Because have they ever been exposed to this? Are they aware of what it looks like? Or are they bringing their previous culture with them where they worked prior to your organization? That's something we have to really understand, is let's be purposeful. Let's start with the first things first. But one of the things we noticed, Greg, is that our management team, some of them really want to do well and want to be perfect, right? So what we noticed is that they took it a little bit too far to the extreme, the opposite end of the spectrum. And I found myself, as did my staff, having to help them come back to center. And we said, hold on, before you move into accountability, because this is a coach's training, let's realize this is going to take us a while, 6 months to a year to understand, because it's change management, right? When you change anything, there's new behaviors. So right now we're focusing on helping the organization realize, let's go light and let's have fun first. Let's fail forward. Let's make it much more conversational and not even talk about accountability for about a good year. We need to realize where we are. But think about it. It's so how we got off center and we're coming back to center. And it's all about having fun, keep it light, and laugh. Have some fun.
Yeah, no, I just read an article the other day about how important it is to have fun in the workplace. And it can't just be this like, you know, grind hard and we've got to do it and it has to be perfect. We have to make it fun and make failure a safe thing.
Yes.
So shifting, thinking about the member consultant, the MSO, what role does their expertise, or let me rephrase, how does the MSO's expertise support a consultative conversation? Why is it important for them to really know what they're talking about to be able to consult a member well?
Oh, there's so many reasons. My God, it's everything. We were just looking at a study because we're doing board preparation for strategic planning. And it was interesting to see the difference of generations and how Generation Z and millennials, how they think. And people, you hear little buzzes about the branch is going away. People aren't going to want to come in the branch. Well, it's interesting because the Gen Zs are the ones that are saying in surveys, and it's proven through focus groups, they're the ones that need to come into the branch the most because they don't understand how to handle their finances. And it's still important. Like, you need money to live and you have to pay rent and you want to buy food and you want to drive a car or rent a car. But at the end of the day, I don't believe branches are going away ever. So the front line, whether you're on the phone or whether you're in a branch, there's still a big need. But what they're saying, the Generation Z, is that they want advice. They want to be guided. They want to understand. So that means we have to get better at holding conversations, but also at listening, right? How do I pick up on cues and clues? Mm-hmm. And how do I present value? That's a craft. It's like any other skill. At the end of the day, you have to hone your craft and you have to focus on the craft and you have to invest in this skill set. And I think that's exactly what we're doing with SRG and with consultative conversations. You really positioned us to be able to have a wonderful program. We customized it. We completely made it appropriate language-wise for our culture. But it is very exciting to see it. You know, MSOs, the frontline, they are everything. They have all the interactions with your client base, with your members. I don't. I have very little interaction with my client base. But I need to understand the skill and be trained in the skill. And I am going through all the training so that I can coach them and give them advice and make sure that we're talking the same language, right?
Yep. Yeah, being able to get them the knowledge to be able to make recommendations, because ultimately you can't have every conversation in the organization, right?
I want to, but I can't.
Yep. So something that strikes me, you know, that's not unique to credit unions, but certainly you experience, the frontline team can be a fairly transient group. You're probably not expecting someone to stay in a frontline role for 10, 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. More like 6 months to a few years. So how do you reconcile that of needing knowledgeable, skilled staff with not expecting them to stay forever for the, you know, there's the 10,000 hour rule to master your craft. Most of your staff are not going to reach that point. So how do you try to keep that knowledge in a transient group?
That's a fantastic question. It's really appropriate because right now we did some studies and about 63% of our frontline staff are new to the role. They've been there less than 2 years. And it's unusual for our organization because pre-COVID, people had been there forever. We had 10-year branch employees and it was just a different world. So you're speaking, you know, current environment. That's absolutely true. So the way we're approaching it is we're starting with the managers first, because as you know, in any frontline retail environment, managers have more longevity than supervisors. Supervisors have more longevity than MSOs, right? Than the frontline staff. So we're really starting with the leaders because they're the ones that are going to hire and be training and onboarding all the new staff. Mm-hmm. But with our SRG Consultative Conversations program, we started with the end in mind. And not only did we want a quality program, but we wanted it sustainable, repeatable, and to have annual refreshers. So I feel like A+, the way we approached this whole program was right. We started it with recognizing the need for our internal training team to own it and to be mm-hmm. part of the journey and to guide as consultants the entire journey. So I think it's really important any organization considering this, that they realize repeatable, sustainable is a critical component to any training. So just to share a little bit, our leaders, our regional leadership team in branches, as we finish our consultative conversations training, we're talking about and we're crafting, creating workshops. So instead of, we go to the corporate training, right? Corporate training trains us. At the end of the day, that's just the experience and exposure to what's expected. That's not applying it. Learning and applying is where you really get, I think, the groove and you get into your momentum. That's going to happen with branch leaders. So the regionals are creating a workshop that they're going to be doing between May and the end of the year. And they're going to mm-hmm. be going out to branches. They're going to have role play. They're going to have fun. They're going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. They're going to laugh. They're going to reward. They're going to have all kinds of activities around it. We're going to have gamification. But learning and applying doesn't happen in a classroom. It happens when you get back in your real world and you're having interactions with your members or your clients, right? Mm-hmm. So that's sustainable. That's repeatable. And I think anyone looking to launch this, you have to be willing to invest and give it focus and time and effort, because we're not going to let this die on the vine. This is now a part of who we are. It's a part of our DNA, and it's not going away. And so mm-hmm. we also trained our entire executive team. So we have all the executive that are directors, AVPs and above, the entire group has gone through this, and we're putting our money where our mouth is. It's part of the expectation and it's non-negotiable.
Yeah, love it that you're getting every level trained. And what it makes me think of is if I'm a new MSO coming in, I'm seeing everyone already doing it and speaking the language. It's going to lower the barrier to adoption for me as a new person when it's just like going to a foreign country. Everyone's speaking Spanish or French or German. Then I'm going to pick it up a lot faster than if I try to do it in an environment where no one is doing that.
Yes. So just to put it in application. So Greg, at the coaches consultative conversations training, I found out that our chief information officer went through the entire training, mm-hmm. Which was multiple days, and that our enterprise risk management senior vice president went through it. And I was like, yes, that's success. And yep. The group loved that he was there, that they were there, because it's just, you don't hear that, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I love it. So now shifting a little bit here, and I want to just do a quick aside. It's okay. It's perfectly fine if we don't even reference like SRG or consultative conversations right now, that it's just talking conceptually about skills. Yes. So we can have a well-intentioned with a positive culture team that is informed and knowledgeable about their products and services. And then there's the how do they deliver that message? How do they engage with a member? So what's the issue if we've got knowledgeable, well-intentioned people that struggle in their conversation skills? What's the risk there?
It's everything. How our team members deliver value, how they discuss options, how they advise, how they consult a member is everything. So that's where we've built into it, inspecting what you expect. It is an absolute expectation that those that are interacting with members and are expected to perfect this skill set, their supervisor, their immediate supervisor, and then their manager above them, have expectations and a rhythm of observing. So observation is critical. How do you know a basketball team is playing well? You can't just turn around and ignore them and expect them to do what they're doing. You have to be there and watch, and you have to coach in the moment. So observations, while inconvenient, I kid you not, absolutely inconvenient, non-negotiable. It's part of retail. It's part of helping your team members be the best version of themselves. And also having positive intent. Listen, every employee wakes up in the morning excited to be successful. No one wakes up excited to fail. But are we going to fail? 1,000%. We're human. We're not robots. There's no perfection. But recognizing that there are going to be failures, that's how you learn. My best lessons in life, Greg, were when I made horrible mistakes, because I'll never make that mistake again. But you have to be allowed to make it. So it's safety in failing, right? You have to be allowed to fail. But creating a culture where observation and observing activities are part of the norm, I think, is the key to success for consultative conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it strikes me, a lot of, like you were mentioning retail groups before, one of the main criteria for hiring someone is, oh, they're friendly. They, you know, they have a nice smile, whatever. They seem approachable. How is that different from being a consultant?
Oh my gosh, what a good question. I think they go hand in hand. Although I'll say you can be friendly and not be an extrovert. You can be friendly and be an introvert. I don't think there's one personality style that's successful. I've seen very wonderful, great people that are friendly and outgoing, but they can't do consultative conversations. Like anything else, it's like saying everybody should be able to play basketball. No, it's a craft, it's a skill. You have to have the muscles for it, the stamina and the willingness. So I think we have to expect that not everybody is going to be successful in it, just like anything else. Even without advising members and consulting members, I still have people that can't do it, right? That's not going to change when you change the expectation. So I think it's about recognizing you're going to have fallout. That's natural. But at the end of the day, what's right for your business? And what's right for your members or your customers? I think that's where we need to focus on.
Great. No, so I think we've covered a lot here. As we close, are there any other like final thoughts that you have? Like if I'm a credit union and I'm kind of on the fence about, you know, should I invest or what does it look like to build these skills in my team? What thoughts would you have for them?
Yeah, another great question. So today's environment is so different than before. Transactions in branches, I think we took it for granted. People were just always coming in. Our transaction count has declined by 40%. So as the future goes in digitizing and the world of convenience is getting more and more, and you've got, you know, so many options today, even Apple just came out with their savings account, right? How did that happen? They're a cell phone computer company. Our competition is everywhere. So I think at the end of the day, a credit union, I really believe in the credit union movement. I think we are not just an industry, we're a movement itself. And to keep credit unions viable, I think the days of just being order takers are gone. So as your transactions decline and you have less and less interactions with your client base, your members, it's more important to optimize that interaction. So when your team members are having interactions with members, why wouldn't you want them to have quality discussions that present value in your products and services? Because at the end of the day, what you have to offer is noble. Everyone needs to be able to manage their finances. Why not with a credit union where it's a democratic cooperative environment? And when one member wins, all members win. It just makes sense. So I think for credit unions that are on the fence, how will you present value in as your declining member interactions occur if you don't invest in teaching your frontline how to hold meaningful conversations, not product push? This is nothing to do with product pushing. It's about listening. It's about understanding the life stage your member is in and what are their needs today, because what they need today may not be what they need tomorrow. So you can't do one size fits all. You have to customize the advice you give to every member to their individual circumstance. If you don't have the skill sets and the foundation to train that, I don't think you're going to survive, and especially in today's digitizing world. So that's my best advice.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining today. Really appreciate all of your insight, Michelle.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.